Chapter 33, Evidences of Divine Guidance, printed in the Review and Herald, March 5, 1936. "We now design," wrote James White in the Review and Herald of October 2, 1860, "to be at the Kirksville, New York Conference the 13th and 14th. 1 week later appeared the announcement over the same signature, "We have decided to go west, and Brother Loughborough will go east. We will, Providence permitting, be at the conference at Mauston, Wisconsin, November 3. The decision of James White to attend the conference in New York had been made in consultation with the brethren attending the annual conference held in Battle Creek that year from September 29 to October 1. At the same time, it was arranged that J. N. Loughborough should attend the meetings in Illinois and Wisconsin, he having labored in these states during the previous summer. The reason for the sudden change in plans is thus related by J. N. Loughborough. As the time to start for the appointments drew near, neither of us felt at rest. Elder White especially was so troubled in mind that he, with Elder M. E. Cornell, came to my home on Champion Street, where we engaged in an earnest praying season in which we all took part. We rose from our knees with our minds entirely changed, he with the conviction that he should go west, and I that I should go east. We changed appointments, having no knowledge of the condition of things in the west." James White filled a number of appointments in Iowa before going to the meetings in Wisconsin. We are reminded of the primitive conditions of those days, when we learn that at Ottumwa he and Elder Moses Hull found lodging for the night in a log tavern. In one corner of the large chamber to which they were assigned, there were about 200 bushels of wheat. In order to ensure proper ventilation for the grain, boards had been taken off the side of the house, leaving an opening about 10 feet square. Through this opening, a chilly west wind blew directly upon the bed, causing the inmates to suffer severely from the cold. In the period following 1844, there was a fruitful field for erratic movements and fanaticism among the distracted, disappointed Adventists. Early in their public work, James White and Ellen Harmon had met various phases of wild and eccentric theories and practices. Clear, plain messages from heaven had been born, rebuking the many false doctrines and fanatical teachings. While the Lord had bestowed the gift of prophecy to guide and comfort His remnant church, the enemy had not been idle. He had brought in counterfeit spiritual gifts, accompanied by noisy demonstrations and excitement. And these demonstrations were also accompanied by great professions of holiness and sanctification. When Elder White arrived at Mauston early in November 1860, he found a similar condition in the company there. They were opposed to the leadership of the work at Battle Creek. Some of the company claimed to have received visions in which they were told that the movement for church organization was wrong and that the church was being led back to Babylon. It may be of interest to give, in his own words, something of how he met this condition. Speaking of a meeting held with the Mauston Church, he says, "We spoke relative to order in the Church of God, that in shunning Babylon, confusion, on the one hand, we should not run into a worse confusion on the other hand, that there is no state in which believers may be, however much of the Spirit or even the gifts they may enjoy, that they can safely lay aside reason and follow impulse. That the Apostle Paul, in speaking of spiritual gifts, in 1 Corinthians 12, 13, and 14, says, 'Seek that ye may excel to the edifying of the church.' Chapter 14, verse 12. 'Let all things be done unto edification.' Verse 26. 'And the spirits of the prophets are subject to the prophets. For God is not the author of confusion, but of peace, as in all churches of the saints.' Verses 32 and 33. 'Let all things be done decently and in order.' verse 40. And let it be borne in mind that these cautions, admonitions, and instructions are given for those under the influence of the choicest and most powerful gifts from heaven. But there is an uncontrollable, ungovernable, untamable spirit attending fanaticism which will run over and shout over these precious portions of the word. This adverse appraisal of these alleged spiritual gifts was not given without a prior thorough examination of their nature and fruitage. A 6-hour meeting, lasting from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., was devoted to a careful study of the manifestations. It was found that those who were supposed to be in vision were conscious of all around them. This was clearly at variance with the experience of Bible prophets in vision. Many of the subjects supposed to be given by divine revelation were trivial and unimportant, and some were shown to be false. In retrospect of this visit to Mauston, James White wrote a few months later regarding the effect of the counsel that he gave. Some received it, others were held in check by the testimony, while a few rushed on and disgraced the cause, and one poor soul, who broke in upon us with wild shouts while preaching, is now in the insane asylum. One of those who did not at that time come out fully from under the influence of this delusion later sent to the Review a confession in which he tells of the later developments of this movement in Wisconsin. He says, "We had, as we supposed, many of the gifts, but I was not satisfied with the development of these gifts. But on the night of January 2, Wednesday, while at Portage, it did begin to develop a new feature, and all that were together and under its influence completely lost control of themselves, or gave up to be controlled by the unseen power, and the scenes that followed, I cannot describe. These scenes continued until the evening after the Sabbath, when they became convinced that it was a delusion. And now we are unanimous in pronouncing it the work of the enemy. We fully and freely denounce it." We can now see clearly why the Lord impressed the minds of Elder Loughborough and Elder White to alter their appointments. The latter, with his broader experience in meeting fanaticism, was best prepared to recognize the spirit back of the supernatural manifestations that were supposed to have been caused by the Holy Spirit. In Testimony for the Church No. 6, which appeared in January 1861, Ellen White wrote of this experience. "I saw that the Lord especially directed my husband in going west last fall instead of going east as he at first decided. In Wisconsin there was a wrong to be corrected. The work of Satan was taking effect and would destroy souls if not rebuked. The Lord saw fit to choose one who had had experience with fanaticism in the past and had witnessed the working of Satan's power. Those who received this instrument of God's choosing were corrected, and souls were rescued from the snare which Satan had prepared for them." The instruction given from the Lord regarding the fanaticism in Wisconsin in 1860 should prove a safeguard against similar attempts of the enemy to deceive the remnant. Regarding the inception of the delusion, we are told, "This strange fanaticism in Wisconsin grew out of the false theory of holiness advocated by Brother K, a holiness not dependent upon the third angel's message, but outside of present truth. Sister G received this false theory from him, carried it out herself, and zealously taught it to others. This nearly destroyed her love for the sacred, important truths for this time, which, if she had loved and obeyed, would have proved an anchor to hold her upon the right foundation. But she, with many others, made this theory of holiness or consecration the one great thing, and the important truths of God's word were of but little consequence, quote, if the heart was only right, close quote. and poor souls were left without an anchor to be carried about by feeling, and Satan came in and controlled minds and gave impressions and feelings to suit himself. Reason and judgment were despised, and the cause of God was cruelly reproached. For a further statement regarding this experience and the lessons to be learned from it, see Testimonies for the Church, Volume 1, pages 228 to 232, 328 to 340. 3 weeks before James White left Battle Creek for the West, a fourth son, John Herbert White, was born. The child seemed to be doing well when Elder White began his journey, and there was no reason for apprehension. Letters received from home contained cheerful news about the little one. However, a few days after leaving Mauston, while at the home of Brother Patch at Mackford, Wisconsin, as he engaged in prayer, he seemed to see the child lying in his mother's lap with head and face terribly swollen and inflamed. He immediately wrote home expressing his fear that the child was not well. 3 days later, when the letter was received, the mother remarked to someone present that if her husband were there, he would not have much faith in his presentiment. The night after James White had so vivid a presentiment regarding the sickness of the babe, he dreamed that a certain firm of brokers at Battle Creek were selling shop-worn shoes in a small store. As he recognized them, he exclaimed, "They have come down." The words awakened him, and he wondered if there was any significance to the dream, for as there was no bank in Battle Creek at that time, he had deposited with this seemingly reliable firm a sum of about $1,800 that had been sent to him to be invested in stock when the Publishing Association was organized. Both the presentiment and the dream passed from his mind. But when a few days later a telegram was placed in his hand, he was prepared for the message that the child was at the point of death and the request that he return home immediately. Canceling his appointment for the following week, he hurried to Battle Creek. Of the sequel, he has written as follows. "When we returned home, November 25, we found the child lying in its mother's arms in the same posture and condition in which it passed before our mind while bowed before the Lord at the house of Brother Patch. For 4 weeks, the anxious parents watched the suffering child, doing all they could for his recovery. They earnestly presented his case to the Lord, asking for healing. But a loving father decided otherwise, and on December 14, the child died. Of her feelings and of the funeral service, his mother has written, "When my child was dying, I could not weep. My heart ached as though it would break, but I could not shed a tear. At the funeral, I fainted. We were disappointed in not having Brother Loughborough to conduct the funeral services, and my husband spoke upon the occasion to a crowded house. We then followed our child to Oak Hill Cemetery, there to rest until the life-giver shall come to break the fetters of the tomb and call him forth immortal." The funeral of the child was in the forenoon. In the afternoon of the same day, as Elder White was entering the review office, there flashed into his mind his experience at Mackford and the dream indicating that the money in the hands of the brokers was unsafe. He immediately called his associates together and expressed his belief that God had given this warning in order to save them from losing the money. The brethren agreed with him that the warning should be heeded, and also with his proposal to invest the money in stone, brick, and lumber for the new office building that was soon to be erected. The purchase of building material was soon made, and the deposits with the brokers were rapidly reduced, until the last of June 1861, when the remainder of the principal and interest were checked out. 2 days later, these brokers were declared bankrupt. As a result, the depositors of Battle Creek and vicinity lost more than $50,000. Of this experience, James White said, Many at Battle Creek knew that we had deposited with these men, and they supposed that we had lost as others had done. And on our return from the east, the question was frequently asked us, "How much did you lose by these men?" We had the pleasure of responding, "Not $1." "Well, you were lucky," was the frequent remark. The providence of God had cared for this investment that had been solemnly dedicated to the cause. And as we often related the foregoing facts, we felt justified in making the statement that God sent his angel to warn us in season to secure the means which had been devoted to his work. This experience had a far-reaching influence. It gave courage to Elder White regarding financial matters, and to his brethren it was an assurance of guidance and safety. If a warning in a dream had enabled him to save the several hundreds of dollars of consecrated money that were in unsafe hands, might they not expect God's guiding hand to be extended in other matters? Thus, they were prepared to regard the Publishing Association, when organized, as a good place to deposit some of their surplus means, which the association would accept as loans without interest, believing that it was as safe as if put in the local bank. In the years that followed, much money was lent to the Review and Herald office without interest, which aided greatly in the printing and carrying of a large variety of books on the present truth.